Environment, Economic Development, and Agricultural Division for Monday, March 2nd, 2015 will come to order. Commissioner Rothman, Department of Commerce, thank you for your patience from last week to this week, and good to see you. I have to reiterate what was said on the Senate floor, that Senator Rood won a gold medal this weekend. What did you win in? I mean, this is really impressive. Go ahead.
U.S. National Snowshoe Championships.
Did you beat everybody or just people in your age group?
Well, come on.
I think that's the answer.
That's good enough. Gold medal's a gold medal.
Absolutely. And us grandmas can run, too, you know.
I found out I have a World C gold medal and a World B gold medal, and they're both exactly the same. And I thought maybe the World A gold medal was different. It's exactly the same also. So, you know, a gold medal's a gold medal.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't say A, B, or C on it. It just says the year.
All right.
So, congratulations. That's
Thank
really
you.
Impressive. How long have you been doing that?
About 18 months.
Whoa, when you already won a game. Whoa,
it's my new thing.
It's even more impressive now. Was there anybody else in the race, though?
No.
Actually, there was 26 states and 4 countries represented.
Wow, that is outstanding. So, good job.
What kind of snowshoes do you use?
Special ones.
What kind of snowshoes? Huh? What kind of snowshoes? Fast ones.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rood doesn't want to endorse any particular snowshoes, so she wouldn't admit to what she was wearing. The kind.
They're called Dion's.
Oh, Dion's.
And they're custom from Vermont. We need to make them in Minnesota, though. We need Minnesota-made snowshoes.
That's a good project for the Economic Development Committee. Good. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to walk through some of the materials today. And just give you an overview of the department, our budget, the governor's recommendations, the proposal, and then some of the change items at the end. In the middle here, I'll ask Tim Janke to join me as we go through some of the budget numbers. So we'll start with this agency overview and the governor's budget presentation. It's the slides. It's just the overview of what the department does and is. As many of you know, the department regulates many industries. We're out to protect the public interest, to advocate for Minnesota's consumers, ratepayers, and make sure that we have competitive and fair marketplaces in all the industries that we regulate, with a focus on strengthening Minnesota's economy and making sure we have strong and good institutions that support Minnesota's economy, our citizens, and our economic development and growth. On page 3 is where I'm heading. We, as you may know, regulate activity in more than 20 industries. The primary ones are insurance, securities, state chartered financial institutions, and then we also do the regulatory work in the energy in collaboration with the Public Utilities Commission and telecommunications. And then the list goes on, as I say. We license approximately 350,000 professionals and entities in Minnesota. We provide consumer affairs services, do fraud investigations, advocate on behalf of public interest.
Fraud?
I remember. It's a fraud. That's the Department of Agriculture. Department of Agriculture investigates frogs, and we investigate fraud.
Okay.
Turning to page 5. The Financial Institutions Division focuses and ensures that our state financial institutions are safe, focusing on the examination and solvency of our financial institutions. We regulate and examine and license the state chartered banks, our credit unions, mortgage companies, finance companies. So, for example, we have 262 banks currently that we regulate. We have a fair number of credit unions, and our work is a daily and weekly and monthly basis. Before I turn off of that, I remember 4 years ago when I was presenting, the financial crisis was still in full gear, and I just have to say, looking at some of the financial situation of our state chartered institutions, we're much better off. They're much better off than we were 3-4 years ago. In the insurance division, we regulate all of the insurance markets that are allowed to and authorized in Minnesota. We evaluate the insurance policies that all the consumers are getting. We look at the rates to ensure that they're fair and in compliance with our statutes. We license, examine, and regulate the domestic and foreign insurance companies to ensure their safety and financial solvency. And some of that work is becoming globalized, meaning some of our insurance companies are getting larger and global, and we do a lot of international work with our regulators across the in Europe and other countries. We ensure in a strong and competitive fair marketplace to make sure that all of our institutions are doing well and working well together. Next, we have our Division of Energy Resources on page 7. The division ensures our energy services are reliable and reasonably priced while minimizing adverse environmental impacts. We advocate on behalf of consumers and ratepayers in the proceedings at the in the regulated utilities, primarily the Public Utilities Commission. We monitor regional and federal regulatory bodies as well, and we work in collaboration and partnership with them. We oversee the conservation improvement programs operated by the public, municipal, and cooperative utilities, and we maintain the state's emergency planning and recovery plans in the event of energy emergencies. And an example of that was the hard work and the emergency work that we did last year on the propane crisis for the state of Minnesota. We promote the energy efficiency of buildings and conservation improvement goals, the alternative fuels, so biofuels and all of that that we work with in collaboration with the Department of Agriculture, and to work on modern energy technologies and the economic development and promotion of those technologies for Minnesotans and Minnesota companies. We administer the low-income heating home energy assistance and weatherization assistance programs as well. And as you'll see, we administer a significant amount of federal dollars to Minnesota citizens that way. Our telecommunications unit, like the energy unit, advocates on behalf of the public interest before the telecommunications regulatory bodies, again, primarily the Public Utilities Commission. We investigate complaints in the telecommunications area. We enforce the telecommunications regulations. And then we also manage what's known as the Telecommunications Access Minnesota program, the TAM program, for those needing additional assistance for communication devices and communications. We next have our enforcement division. The enforcement division works in many of the industries that we regulate. We ensure compliance and responsible business conduct in Minnesota. We regulate a broad range of all of the licensed occupations that we oversee and respond to consumer complaints when they come up, and also conduct market conduct examinations of companies to make sure that they're in compliance with Minnesota laws. There are primarily three major units in the enforcement area: the Civil Enforcement Unit with its staff. We also have the Securities Unit that reports directly to our Assistant Commissioner of Enforcement, as to myself, and then our Commerce Fraud Bureau. That's our criminal investigation unit of licensed peace officers. Then we also have market conduct examinations. And then in our securities area, we do a lot of the state-based registration, examination, and enforcement activities. And then we have a strong strong focus on insurance fraud in both the civil and criminal areas. Next is our broad overview of our administrative services section. Many of the staff that work here collaborate with the staff in the department in many other areas. But under this services area, we have our licensing unit. They license approximately 190,000 professionals. So, for example, those are all the real estate agents, the insurance agents across the state of Minnesota. It's tens of thousands of folks in all of those professional activities. We also have a consumer services center that does consumer protection work. It's a phone center. We have staff handling consumer complaints, helping with constituent work that we get either directly from the legislature, from the governor's office, or from any source in terms of issues that consumers may have. We also engage in outreach activity, and this unit is the one that staffs much of the disaster response. So, for example, we had the tornado disaster that blew through Minneapolis a few years ago, the flood in Duluth, and then as well the propane crisis we had last year was staffed in a large part by this at its core, as well as some of the volunteers around our agency. We also have the unclaimed property unit in our department, and we conduct outreach to Minnesotans to reconnect them to their lost property. One of 20 Minnesotans have lost property in Minnesota. It's turned over to the state. And we also serve the owners of abandoned property. We collect the support of the state from the holders, the financial institutions, employers, and others, any unclaimed property that is required to be turned over to the state of Minnesota. The central services area is primarily the administrative area of our department. And then in the next couple of pages are two unique areas. One is weights and measures, which is one of the state's first consumer protection units established in 1885. It was originally and historically founded because of a lot of the problems that were happening with weighing and measuring wheat and flour in the state of Minnesota. It's headquartered in Burnsville, Minnesota. It ensures the accuracy of all of our commercial transactions, either based on weight or on measure. We make sure that all of the weights and scales that are being used in Minnesota's the commerce are within tolerances and under standards. We also have we look at the consistency and quality of petroleum products around the state of Minnesota, and we provide the precision mass and temperature and density and volume measurement services. If you haven't ever seen this unit, it's actually phenomenal. We have scales that are as small as your pinky nail to as large as a railroad car to make sure that all the scales in Minnesota are properly calibrated to the extent that they have to be and need to be. The next is a Petrofund unit. This unit is staffs the Petrofund board. We work in collaboration with the PCA, and it contracts to remove abandoned underground petroleum storage tanks across Minnesota. And we provide the technical and staffing support for the Petrofund. With that, we can. That's generally the overview of the department, the primary areas in which we operate, we work. And then in the next handout that you have is the four pager with this is a summary that we put together of the governor's recommendations. So I'm going to have Tim Janke come up and join me. The first page is just fast facts, interesting things, just to point out the scope and breadth of what the Department of Commerce does on a regular basis. So you can see we oversee over $50 billion in assets for the banks, credit unions, and finance companies, $5 billion under securities regulation. We have, for example, we've saved $384 million from Minnesota ratepayers in 2013 alone. This tells you generally the number of low-income households that we serve in our low-income heating assistance program, and then a number of other key interesting facts that we put together.
When you say $384 million in savings to ratepayers, is that because you recommended lower rates than the companies wanted, or what is
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly right. Companies will come in and ask for certain, for rate increases, and we have staff that look at over 100 various factors in terms of whether or not they're justified rates or not, whether or not the rates of return are there, whether or not the costs are there, and all of those things. Yes.
Does the PUC generally do what you recommend?
Mr. Chair, I'm proud to say that the Department of Commerce has a great batting record.
Okay. Yeah. Senator, no? You're looking at me like you have a question.
Yeah, I have some questions, but I think he's still presenting, so.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, but you can ask him if you want.
Yeah, that's fine, I'll wait.
Okay. You're going to turn it over now? Or are you done?
We'll go to page two, yeah.
Okay, and so just before you go,
yeah.
I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but what, can you give us like a quick snapshot update of the propane and how it has, I mean, I realize the weather was a big deal this year, but it seems to me supply has changed too. Is that correct? Or
yeah.
Give me just a down and dirty of what's gone on in the propane and how we've kind of averted having the same problem we had last year.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we have averted it. Obviously, we have better weather this year. But if we had the weather that we did last year, Minnesota and the Department of Commerce worked with the propane industry to prepare well in advance of this winter on a number of things. First of all, the Department of Commerce worked proactively with a number of the propane industry companies in Minnesota to build additional infrastructure, major storage facilities in various parts of the state. So, for example, with CHS and Dooley's and some of the other others, we expanded not only the major industrial-sized storage facilities, but also encouraged the development and expansion of on-the-farm storage or in the homes and businesses. As part of that, we also improved or focused on the rail infrastructure because of we needed to have alternative a mode of transporting propane into Minnesota because of the Cochin pipeline shutdown that happened. we worked to eliminate, the Department of Commerce worked to eliminate a lot of the permitting barriers and things that needed to happen to get the infrastructure in place. So one was infrastructure. Second of all, we worked with the summer pre-fill programs with the propane industry to make sure we got the word out and advised consumers and businesses to fill. And if you look, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but coming into, say, September and October, as we hit the harvesting in November, late October, November, the propane supplies that were being stored in Minnesota in comparison to last year were, I'd say, somewhere between 10, 20, 25% higher than they were. So we were more prepared going into. And then regionally and as a nation, the propane supply and storage facilities were at about 5 or 10% higher than they were the prior year, meaning we could draw on those national resources in the case we got hit in Minnesota. So there's a lot of collaboration to make sure that we had enough propane to come around if we did get hit. And the last thing was that the draw on the propane supply in that late October, November time period was not as drastic as the year before. It was spread out over a period of time, and the weather cooperated, so didn't need to have as much of the drying that was needed. So we were going into December very well, and we averted it with sort of the milder weather that we had compared to last year. So we were prepared. We were in great situation, and it turned out to be pretty good.
You know, regarding the summer pre-buy program so they can get lower rates, some of my constituents told me that unless they were half empty or half full, depending if you're an optimist or a pessimist, but that they wouldn't deliver. And is that just an individual company policy, or is that some kind of a rule that we have or a law we have somewhere? What do you know about that, if you know anything?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I know a little bit. It's primarily a company issue. There's no regulation. In fact, the department advocates and advises folks that you should never get down to 10%. You should focus on that 20 to 30%. And if you're hitting the 30%, you should be refilling. So if you're being refused at 50%, that's not a good thing. I should also say and backtrack a little bit. I think we put into place some protections last year. So if you have a budgeting program with your propane dealer, you should be allowed to do those pre-fills. And if you have issues with them, we would encourage you to call the Department of Commerce, and we'll help facilitate that.
Okay. I'll let them know that. Okay. Senator Westbrook.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, is there more storage being planned, or do we think we now are built up to have the storage necessary, especially to make up for the pipeline loss and the fact that we have to ship more of it in with rail or truck? What's that picture look like going forward? And second to that, I'm hearing that a lot of suppliers maybe have excess supply right now, such that the price is artificially held up because they haven't gotten rid of their inventory. They brought in at a higher price, and the prices are actually lower now. And so I say that in contemplation. Does that stymie some of the future storage that might be on the books? And does that mean we don't get built what we maybe need built in our state? Kind of two questions in one.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, those are two very good questions. I think, let me just start out at a 50,000 foot level. One was that we wanted to make sure that there was a sufficient infrastructure and storage capacity built in the dire circumstances situation. Cochin provided somewhere between, approximately 30% of the state supply of propane. So when you take that huge chunk of propane supply out of the state, it was necessary to build either an alternative way to transport it into Minnesota or sufficient storage facilities in the state of Minnesota. There's really two parts, I think, to the answer to your question. One is that I think in collaboration with industry, you know, the state is working with building up sufficient storage capacity. I don't know if it's, you know, there's no one answer to how to solve the problem. And in part because much of what has to be decided is how much industry, what's the market-driven answer to your question, which is at what price is it best appropriate, have the markets adjusted, have the suppliers, the distributors adjusted to the Cochin pipeline situation. And I think we all wanted to see how this winter played itself out. And as the market adjusts to the situation, I think that, you know, we're going to keep a close eye on it. I think the one area of infrastructure development that remains to be carefully and closely monitored is the rail infrastructure development. If we're going to rely more on rail for propane deliveries, and we do have a problem situation, number one, it's going to take time for that rail infrastructure to build itself out, more than just a year or two. And we already have rail congestion and problems with, you name the commodity. And I think with respect to the propane situation, it becomes a trapped commodity on the rails if we're relying on that as a way to deliver propane in an emergency situation, because, you know, it's one car or two on a train load of 100, and it may be stuck somewhere in Canada before it gets here. So we need to be careful about that. And so what I would say is we need to just I think it'd be good, actually, to have sort of a stakeholder meeting like we've had before with legislators, yourself, myself, and all to come back and ask these very questions to see how we came out of this last winter. But you've identified some important questions with the pricing and supply and all of that.
So, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, relating to the other pipelines we have in the state that bring in propane, what do we have for infrastructure? I believe there's at least one or two other pipelines that do bring in a significant amount of propane as well. Can you just give me the lay of the landscape for that, and about how much is coming in pipeline and what's left in that regards?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, the primary alternative pipeline is Enterprise. There's some that deliver into the Mankato area, and then there's a second pipeline that comes up to the other refineries. I don't have the total number of volume off the top of my head. I didn't prepare for that, but I have known the exact answer to those questions, but I can provide those to you. But it's a fair amount of supply.
Thank you.
Senator Ingraham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, when we're on the subject of permits, you said you did a considerable amount of money on railroad infrastructure permits. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that, on what your department does with regards to assisting the obtaining of permits with obviously environmental issues and whatnot? Can you elaborate a little bit on what your office has done there?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Ingraham, yes, there were several projects in which it was primarily in the storage facilities. There were some projects that the amount of propane gallons in total and aggregate, or either in one storage facility or an aggregate of storage facilities, triggered PUC review, Public Utilities Commission review of major projects that needed permitting through the Public Utilities Commission. So the Department of Commerce worked with several of the industry members to get through the PUC process and whether or not that we needed a waiver to make sure that it happened as fast as it could. And we facilitated that situation. The other that comes to mind is that there's a facility in central Minnesota, sort of in the Mankato area, Dooley's facilities, that needed permitting that wasn't necessarily expected. So it was with respect to not only that, but also with respect to the Army Corps of Engineers needed to take a look at it. So it turned out that it was in wetlands area that was unanticipated. So the department worked with the Army Corps of Engineers, Pollution Control Agency, to make sure that those were expedited and happened as fast as they could. And then as well, there were, Dooley's has a track and rail situation that they'd set up, and so we facilitated conversations with the rail folks to make sure that people's attention was paid to it so that those facilities were built out as quickly as they could.
Okay. Senator Ingraham.
Okay. You finally got to the railroad part there. So that was new construction we're talking about, not existing railroad construction or repair.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Ingraham, so there was some track that was there, but they needed to build out a switch and some the ability to offload the propane there, and so they'd had to build some additional infrastructure for that.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, you talked about Enforcement Services Commissioner with regards to different entities and government, and specifically, and I know this is somewhat of a hot topic, but I'm going to ask it. Administering the low-income energy assistance weatherization project in Minneapolis. And I know this has come to the attention of, I guess, quite a few people, as well as the administration. And I'm just wondering, I and Senator Westrom have West Central Community Action, a dozen, works with that a lot, with weatherization assistance. And I'm wondering, did you investigate that alleged misappropriation going on? Or can you give us a little rundown as to where that's at?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingraham, so the question, I wasn't sure I caught the specific question, which I'm happy to brief you on anything.
Sure, maybe that'd be the best way to do it. But you said that you enforce the any wrongdoings, any alleged wrongdoings in the administration of the, and one would be the low-income home energy assistance and weatherization assistance programs in your presentation here. I know you had kind of expounded on your enforcing division, and I was just wondering if you, where that's at with regards to the community action of Minneapolis.
Sure.
And that, those allegations and where they are with regards to your department right now.
Sure.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingraham, again, I'm happy to brief you in detail on any of those matters. So the community action of Minneapolis issues actually go back two or three years. So if you don't mind, I'd start there with respect to the department. Again, the Department of Commerce administers both the low-income heating assistance program and weatherization programs. Back in late 2011, the department learned that Community Action Minneapolis had overspent funds to its residents that had qualified for eligibility to the approximate amount of about $1.3 million. Specifically, what was happening was that Minneapolis would determine somebody's eligibility, and even though they may have been eligible for a certain amount of dollars, they would give more than those amount of funds to the residents of Minneapolis. And once the department saw that this was happening, we stopped it. The Department of Commerce said, number one, stop. Number two, we recovered over $300,000 in funds and we stopped the funding of it through the utilities, which, as you may know, is the way that the funding goes. We put Minneapolis Community Action Agency on a corrective action plan to fix the problem, which we monitored very closely over the last since the time that they were put under the corrective action. And we reached a settlement with them that was approved and reviewed by the agencies involved to return or to pay a penalty, excuse me, of $100,000 for having overspent those funds. So that was the 2011-2012 event, and the Department of Commerce hired an independent auditor called Baker Tilly to review and audit the situation, and based its decision making on some of the audit findings. The specific corrective action plan, the incident that happened and our auditing of it, was also reviewed during that time period by the legislative auditor. So the legislative auditor specifically looked into how this incident happened and what the department's plan was, and found in large part that things look good. And then I should also say that the Office of the Legislative Auditor has also been in at a programmatic level to audit the department's oversight administration of the LIHEAP program and the weatherization program itself. So that was 2011-2012, and then in 2013, pretty much the department was overseeing the corrective action plan. From time to time, there were issues that came up, and we needed to make sure that they were being fixed at the time. In August of 2014, and I'm going off my memory here because, you know, we can give you more details as well. In August of 2014, the Department of Human Services, so DHS, put out a report. The DHS report was an audit that it had done, DHS had done, of the funds that that DHS administers to community action agencies. So these are funds that are not the LIHEAP funds, it's not weatherization, but they're funds that the Department of Human Services gives to community action agencies throughout the state of Minnesota. So it audited, the DHS audited Community Action in Minneapolis and found that, and the report is out there and it's public, it found that Community Action in Minneapolis had misspent the funds that DHS administered, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so at that time, I saw the report, our staff at the Department of Commerce saw the report. Again, this wasn't Department of Commerce funding, but because Community Action was already under a corrective action plan, it created enormously serious concerns in the Department of Commerce's mind with respect to the situation at Community Action in Minneapolis. Very quickly, the department put together an action steps action plan. The primary features of that were to, look at and audit to determine whether or not there were any misspent funds that Department of Authorization or Low-Income Heating Assistance had. So that's in process. At the same time, the department looked into what would be needed in the event that Community Action of Minneapolis' contracts or the situation needed to be terminated with Community Action of Minneapolis, meaning that these events were serious enough to warrant or justify the termination of, from the Department of Commerce's perspective, its contracts on weatherization and LIHEAP with Community Action of Minneapolis. So we quickly looked into all of the fact situation, the factual situation that was happening there. And then at the same time, we were considering whether or not to terminate. If we were to terminate, we would also have to have in place alternative service providers for both of those programs. So it would take us a few weeks to get this to work itself out, as you can imagine, especially for the residents, thousands of Minnesota residents that are recipients under the program. So in order to provide a safe and sound transition, our staff studied the situation and concluded that a couple of things. One, we needed, in order to do this transition, we needed to get our hands, the Department of Commerce's hands on files, records, and data at Community Action Minneapolis. Ultimately, we decided that the Department of Commerce would terminate its relationship with Community Action of Minneapolis. And as we did that, we conducted an investigation where we went in and actually seized the records, seized the data and information. That's publicly reported. It was in the press. And then once we did that, we simultaneously terminated the contracts and transitioned the services over to two new providers to provide the low-income heating assistance and the weatherization services to Minneapolis, all within the space. And we had to have this done by October, beginning of October, because the program year started in October. And as you can imagine, with everything that was happening, we wanted to make sure we had a seamless transition. So those are the things that we did. We did the transition. We are currently and continually looking on that. The one other item I should mention is that I need to mention is that the Department of Commerce, in partnership in conjunction with the Department of Human Services, which also decided to suspend or terminate its relationship with Community Action Minneapolis, both agencies petitioned for the appointment of a court-appointed receiver to oversee Community Action Minneapolis. In November, the court approved that, and since then, there's been a court-appointed receiver that's been sorting through all the accounts of Community Action Minneapolis, sorting through all the claimants, all of the people who would be due any money or whatever claims, basically, with Community Action Minneapolis. And all of those are being resolved under court-supervised receivership as we speak. And then we'll continue to work with the court-appointed receiver as things proceed with those proceedings. It's a long-winded answer to a very complicated matter, and again, I'm very happy to brief you in more detail.
And I allowed the question, but for purposes of today's hearing, we want to do the budget. And so, Senator Ingebrigtsen, if you can...
That's where I'm going with this.
Go to the budget, please, because we want to get to the whatever these fees are that they want to charge this year and whatever else is on this budget. But the CAP agency has been pretty well publicized, and it's been going on for quite a while. And that was a 10-minute answer, just so you know. So you did
well,
a pretty good
Mr.
job.
Mr. Chair, it was very good. Very good answer,
yes,
so we all know where we're at.
Yes.
Financially, I do have a couple questions. So,
Do you want to wait till we explain it, or do you want to ask first? Why don't we go through the budget, and then however you want to do it here, Commissioner.
Sure. I think we'll do it in two parts. One is that Tim Janke will walk through the governor's the base budget, which is on the second page of this other handout, and then he'll turn it back to me, and I'll go through the change items and give you a summary of those.
Okay, Mr. Janke, just say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Tim Janke, I'm the CFO at the Department of Commerce.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll start walking through the page just so members can see. It's the page here with three graphs or on the left and a chart and a graph on the right column. Mr. Chair, members, this is the base budget for the Department of Commerce as presented in early December. So I'll walk through kind of at a high level here, and if there's questions along the way, feel free. The chart in the upper left is really meant to give kind of an overall view of the department. You can see from the title there that for fiscal year 16-17, we have a base budget of just over $469 million. The largest, by far, portion of that budget is in the Division of Energy Resources at $363 million. That's primarily going to be driven by energy assistance and weatherization funding that we were just talking about, as well as some Made in Minnesota funding that came out of some legislation in the last couple years. If you look at the top of the chart on the right, you can walk through that $363 million in detail. You can see $290 million of it comes from the low-income heating assistance program. Made in Minnesota is just over $28 million, weatherization, conservation improvement, and then the environmental review and analysis is really the dollars that are general fund dollars. That's going to be the primary general fund dollars for the Energy Resources Division, and those are spent for the staff or those the staff that primarily do rate review and work with the PUC folks. Weights and Measures Division is listed here. They're about $7.2 million a year, or a biennium. That is all special revenue funds, and that is included in the admin portion below. The insurance division is just over $17 million.
Excuse me, Mr. Janke, just for the committee's information, if you wanted to see what it looks like in the budget book, it's on page 3 of the commerce section of the budget book. So it starts there. So. Okay, go ahead.
The insurance division is primarily funded through general fund and some special revenue funds for the insurance exam revolving fund. It's about split evenly between those two. As well, they have a small rate review grant of about $600,000. Financial institutions is $9.7 million biennially. That is primarily general fund dollars that are appropriated for regulation of banks, credit unions, and mortgage and mortgage examinations. The petrol fund is $20.8 million. A small portion of that, about $1.5 million, is for admin. The rest is for claims that are paid out of the fund. That doesn't include the dollars that are direct appropriated for economic development and some transfers over to the PCA. Administrative services totals about $16.5 million. So that's going to be the general back office support types of things for financial management, human resources, our regulatory information center, and some other areas within the department. Enforcement is about $24 million. Commissioner talked about that group a little bit before. $9.2 million of that is general fund dollars. They also have $4.9 million that's for the auto theft prevention account and about $4 million that's for the fraud bureau. And the last area is the telecommunications area. That's $10.9 million. Of that, $2 million is a general fund appropriation. The rest is $8.9 million is in the TAM, the telecommunications access account. So that kind of walks through the expenditure side and gives you an idea.
Is general fund about 10%?
The general fund is, I'd have to do the math, Senator, but that sounds about right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, then the next chart on the left here indicates the revenue that the department will bring as planning or in the base budget would bring in, which is $597 million. It's a little complicated, the slide here, but really what it's trying to show is it shows that there's about $202 million of non-dedicated general fund revenues. So those are going to be dollars that are brought in from securities, registrations, from licensing, and they are all going to the general fund as non-dedicated revenues. The other portions here on the right side of the slide, special revenue funds are about $84.5 million for the biennium, and then general funds are about $310 million for the biennium. What really trying to get to is down here in the bottom slide on the left, that will indicate, if you look at the blue portion of the bar on that chart, the department's estimated to bring in about $201 million of general fund revenue for the coming biennium, and the general fund appropriation is $48 million. The other fund portions are roughly the same. You can see that the spending is a little bit higher, about $26 million higher, and that's because of some carry forward dollars that we have into the coming biennium that we're estimating.
So on the right side of your chart, under administrative services, where you got unclaimed property program?
Yes.
Is that, no, that's an expenditure, correct?
Mr. Chair, that is the expenditure of $1.5 million.
How much do we take in then?
Mr. Chair, I believe on an annual basis it's in the around $50-55 million that the unclaimed property program is bringing in.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, and I'll just mention that that number will vary from year to year as the remittances come in. And I can find you the exact numbers in the information here that I have. I'll just take a minute. I'll just walk through the last slide on the bottom right. That's the base FTE by fiscal year. As you can see, from fiscal year 15 to 16, 17, and 18, our FTE numbers are projected to drop by about 20 FTE based on the current level of funding, so that just indicates where we are with the base budget.
And then do we know which departments the drops in, or is it all across the board, or what?
Mr. Chair, members, it's really all across the agency. It's there's a number of factors. Some of them, primarily, it's based on some of the increases that have been, some of the contractual increases from our employees over the years. Our budget is primarily, our general fund budget is about 80% FTE costs. We have most of our positions are funded through the general fund, and all of our federal funds are passed through except for the work that folks are doing directly on them. So they have... that's had an impact on those increases have had an impact on our staffing levels. Mr. Chair, that's it for my slides here, and then I'll turn it back to the Commissioner.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Jenke? Okay. Commissioner.
All right. Transitioning from the base budget, and you'll see the FTE drop off. Some of our Department of Commerce budget improvements and change items for the governor's recommendations. Excuse me. The governor's recommendations are to fill those drop offs, and then to focus on some of the department's initiatives. The third page is really just a summary of the types of budget objectives that we have. And then on the right side are the governor's recommendations, which I'll go through in more detail, and they are on the next page in greater detail. But overall, what we're trying to do is enhance our consumer protections, funding business critical functions that are important to the department, to strengthen some of the protections that are out there, to shore up these deficiencies and improve our performance in some areas that we need additional resources for, and then to also create flexibility in our budgeting so that we can continue to work on protecting the public interest. So on the last page here, this is a summary of the governor's recommended changes. They're in your materials, but this is a good...
Members, this is on page 8 of the budget book. It starts on page 8.
So in either way, I'll walk through these in the order that we have them here on this the last page. So the first one is the vulnerable and older adult financial protection proposal. The idea here is to protect Minnesotans, protect those that are older Minnesotans from financial abuse and exploitation. The department has a high priority as a top enforcement matter to stop criminals from preying on Minnesotans, and we have worked over the last few years to do this. And based on that work, and as we look around some of the other states, we pull together some proposals to help help Minnesota financial institutions, help the department tackle financial abuse of seniors. It requires regulated entities to report cases of suspected financial abuse and exploitation. It gives regulated entities the ability to refuse the dispersal of funds, provides a space of immunity for liability for the institutions and their personnel. It expands civil and criminal penalties and provides certain training. The source of funding for this is the department looked at a variety of different ways to source. I should say this at the beginning. We don't have a particular interest in necessarily focusing on one source for this fund, but looked at a variety of different things. And the governor's recommendation is to fund it at this point with a $1 fee on life and annuity products. It would be put into a senior trust fund in which we could it would support the resources needed for that. It does, over a period of time, provide two staff in fiscal year 16, two additional in 17, and one additional in 18 as the funding source increases for that over time.
Senator Dietzick.
He can finish this discussion, and then I'll ask my question if he's still on this.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Commissioner. Is your question on this?
Yes.
Okay, then go ahead and ask him.
I don't remember if it was a joint Public Safety and Judiciary Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember the conversation. We had U.S. Attorney Andy Luger here, and there is a financial crimes task force that they have set up that, you know, works with the counties and the state. Have you had discussions there, and any idea on how this would coordinate with that group?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzick, yes. The Department of Commerce has, first of all, the task force is housed technically over the Department of Public Safety. So in collaboration with Commissioner Doman and myself, we work collaboratively. The Department of Commerce, civil investigators and criminal investigators work collaboratively with federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies and prosecutors. That task force is focused primarily on identity theft.
Okay.
And other white-collar types of crimes that are within its jurisdiction, separate and apart from the jurisdiction that the Department of Commerce has. So while we may overlap, and if we have issues that come up, and from time to time we might have issues where a local law enforcement is investigating a similar thing we do, we collaborate with those folks. So yes, we do, and I do collaborate and have a very strong and good relationship with the U.S. Attorney.
Thank you.
Now you know what we feel on the range when they blast, just so you guys. Go ahead, Senator.
I wondered if it was an earthquake.
Senator Dietzick, are you done?
Yep, thank you.
Okay, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, I heard you say that you had looked at different ways to fund this program, and so you're looking for five FTEs. I've got two questions. Why should, how did you come down to determine that the people who buy life insurance policies and have an annuity policy should be responsible for this rather than the general population, since it's a, it sounds to me like a human services problem. But how did you come to that recommendation, and then how would you conduct financial literacy education and training? How would that happen?
Mr. Chair and Senator, let me start at 30, 40,000 feet. Since I started as Commissioner of Commerce, there has been a lot of white-collar criminal activity that the Department of Commerce has investigated and brought to prosecution for abuse of senior citizens. So it's in a variety of industries and products. So it's within the Department of Commerce's jurisdiction to help stop financial abuse of senior citizens. So, for example, you know, Minnesotans across the state of Minnesota are being scammed on, whether it's on the internet. We also, the department regulates the wire transfer companies. So we've been working to stop the wire transfers of folks that have been scammed. And then as well, we have brought a lot of civil investigations and work with criminal prosecutors on investigations that we've had where senior citizens have been scammed out of their life savings from a white-collar financial perspective. In terms of funding, and the first part of your question, Department of Commerce is agnostic in terms of where the funds come from. Just so long as we are able to obtain the funds to be able to continue the work that we're doing, to continue to fight against the crime that's happening against senior citizens. And so if there is a general fund source, that's fine. If there are other fees or licenses, we're happy to explore those as well. And then whether it's in securities or insurance, there is a fair amount of activity with respect to senior fraud that happens in that area. We're not targeting a particular industry by identifying this source. I want to be upfront about that. We're not saying it's one industry versus another, but because it does happen in the securities and insurance area, we wanted, there is a tie-in, and the last answer is that a similar or same legislation exists in California, and this is the funding source there that passed through in California for these activities.
Senator Scalzi.
Just as a follow-up, I just have a problem personally with, say there's a young family who has little children and they decide to be good citizens and so they want to purchase a life insurance policy. It just doesn't seem to me that they should be impacted by having to pay for this program, which is sort of, in my mind, a different type of a program than some young family buying a life insurance policy. I just disagree with that.
Senator Root.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Rothman, as I read this, it says it requires Commerce Department regulated entities and their employees. So, and so far you've just been talking about mostly banking, and then there's the insurance. But for me, as a real estate broker, I'm a regulated entity also. And so this seems to capture the real estate industry. And it says that we're supposed to report suspected financial exploitation and face a $5,000 penalty if we don't. And I'm thinking that creates an incredible burden on this industry that they may not know, number one. And then we go on to say that you're going to curriculum standards developed by the Commerce Department. And I think, you know, as you know, right now the insurance companies and the real estate companies are all struggling under the Commerce Department's education regulations right now. We've been talking about seat time and how many courses that we, every year we add more courses that are required versus education should be what we need to have to do our business versus now we just, last year we had the broker course that we created immense problems in our industry, and we keep adding that on. So now that's going to be one more if you include real estate in this conversation. And then
if they perceive that we've been a bad actor in real estate, then we can now be sued by the person. I think the onus you're putting on these companies for this perceived, the penalties and the education, and I think this is really creating a monster here.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't know if there was a particular question. I mean, let me just say a few things in response. First of all, Minnesota seniors report to me and report all the time that they are the victims of fraud and abuse. We work with the United States Attorney's Office. I've worked with the Sheriff's Association through their organization called Triad. I've spoken at many, many events where senior citizens report all the time that they're getting phone calls on a daily basis. They're being victimized by people either calling and solicited over the phones. They're also scammed on the internet, preyed on upon primarily from criminal organizations outside the United States, whether it's Jamaica, Mexico, and some organizations in Canada and Russia, through the internet. They are also working with their financial institutions to stop it. One particular story comes to mind of where a senior citizen was, she was in her 80s, she was convinced to take thousands of dollars out of her her bank account, walk down to the local wire transfer outfit, and that money was shot across overseas and never to be found again. We've worked with credit unions and state chartered banks, other CPAs, for example, doctors, social workers throughout the state of Minnesota to heighten awareness of this problem, of the criminal activity, and to try to stop it to the best that we can. Financial institutions have a very difficult time. So if, for example, a proposed transaction comes to a teller at a state bank or at a credit union, they often struggle with what to do next. How can they stop a transaction that is clearly something that is against the interests of the senior citizen? And what we've worked with in collaborating with them is a program of regulatory reporting under the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act to say that in the event that you do see this, that you have the authority to report it to the regulator so that we can help stop it. We know that $2.7 billion is being defrauded of our senior citizens across the United States. Minnesotans are victimized. Minnesotans are nice people. But right now we have the largest amount of wealth in the United States that's invested by our senior citizens. And criminals know.
Commissioner, you're dealing with fraud. I think what's going on here is we're questioning, or what I'm hearing at least is questioning the source of the funding to increase the amount of
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Ruffman, I guess maybe here's my question. So are you including real estate in this? It seems that mostly you've talked about banks and insurance. Clarification, are you insuring the real estate licensees in this? And also, who would decide if I should have suspected something? I mean, what's the governing body that's going to decide that I should have suspected something in this transaction and that now I'll be fined for that and be under civil penalty? That would be my question.
There's a couple of good questions for you.
Mr. Chair and Senator, first of all, I think with respect to the penalties, I'll double check. I'm not sure that while it's written in here, I'm not sure that you mentioned that $5,000 penalty. I'm not sure if it's in the final proposal coming from the department, but in particular, I'm open to having that conversation because I share your concern with respect to, ultimately where that penalty might land if it's a question. Second of all, the way it's drafted is to be for those commerce-regulated entities, so it's intended to be as broad as all of the financial institutions and folks that we oversee. The idea here, again, is simply to say that if you believe that that you're in a position where you can't report it because you're concerned about your own liability and immunity, this is meant to give you that space to say, wait a minute, I think this is a problem. I think this transaction potentially is a scam against senior citizens. You would give it to or report it to us. If the department investigated something and it included a fraud on senior citizens, it would give us the authority to work with folks to stop it and then to try and prevent it from happening up front. With respect to where you reported, it would be to the Department of Commerce.
Okay. Just one last. Real estate included, yes or no?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Rothman, it seems to me that this tends to fall into the Attorney General's purview, or am I mistaken? It just, so much of this tends to, the way you've have this written, and you're talking about people that are being abused and there's fraud taking place. How is this not the purview of the Attorney General's office and not Department of Commerce?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator, the Attorney General has jurisdiction under its statutes and authority to pursue a lot of activity that is omissions, misrepresentations, and fraud and abuse. The Department of Commerce has investigative authority, which gives the Department of Commerce in the regulated industries the authority to do the investigations. And the Department of Commerce works with the Attorney General in many instances where our jurisdictions overlap, but they don't overlap 100%. So many times, often, the Attorney General will refer an investigation or a fraud matter to the Department of Commerce for investigation. That's within the Department of Commerce's jurisdiction. Many times we collaborate together and work together on some of these, but not always. And with respect to criminal investigations, the department has the Insurance Fraud Bureau, the Commerce Fraud Bureau, excuse me, where we have the criminal investigators specifically authorized and licensed to do the criminal investigation, which the Attorney General does not.
One more question, then we'll get going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So the FTEs that you're going to be hiring here to do this law enforcement action are going to be licensed peace officers, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, while the answer, the five FTEs, two FTEs to do education and outreach and training. So we have we've piloted programs with the credit unions and the banks to do outreach and initiatives. Second of all, we have two enforcement staff. The two enforcement staff are meant to be civil investigators, not the criminal investigators. And then one FTE to help on the with the communications and making sure that we have folks have the program set up with consumer alerts and all of that activity. So the answer is no, not criminal investigators.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it were a criminal investigation, then you'd go back to the local agency, then sheriff or city police, working with them and triad with the senior fraud that's been going on for years.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we would collaborate, and to the extent that it was a criminal fraud, we would still have the staff in that unit to do the work. We're just not asking for an additional FTE with this proposal for that unit. But we would work with the local sheriffs.
So we're going to try and wrap this up in 15 minutes if we can, because we have a bill on the agenda. Since we're on the first one on the last page, Commissioner, how many more fees are these? All the fee increases, or are these just the totals of what we're going to be doing?
Mr. Chair, there's no specific additional fee, but there are assessments or change of assessments. So I'll quickly go over those. On the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program, there would be an additional assessment that would go into the Special Revenue Fund to fund this program. And this is This would be financed, however, out of the savings that come that would be part of the savings project. So it would not be it would be part of the savings that would come out of your energy efficiency programs. The energy planning and systems extension is is currently a program that an assessment that exists in place. It currently funds the department. It's scheduled to sunset at the end of this fiscal year, and so what this does is to continue it so the sunset does not happen. The energy regulation and planning from the general fund, that decoupling proposal is a net zero in terms of the amount of funds that are going to the unit. It's being shifted from the general fund to a special revenue fund, and those dollars, while they are assessed out now, it would be they'd be tweaked and changed. Instead of going into the general fund, it would be going into the special revenue fund. And then on the Commerce Fraud Bureau.
Now, is that under our control right now, and then it would be under your control? Is that a good way of saying it?
The better way to say it is that it gives the department flexibility to help the utility industry meet the demand. And in essence, what it does is instead of running it as a general fund item, it would be a special fund. Run by a special fund. And then we have the Commerce Fraud Bureau funding, which is when the program was established, it is set up to be funded by an assessment to companies. There's three tiers. If you're a small company, mid-size, or large company, it's a different size assessment, and this would increase those assessments so that you would have this additional funding into those. So I think that's it. The rest is general fund.
So how big were the increases in the last one you just asked about? The Fraud Bureau.
Mr. Chair, on the Commerce Fraud Bureau fund?
Yeah.
I don't have those with me. I can get those to you.
Okay. All right. And the rest are, and so what's the total general fund request increase? Hey, we got that sitting here somewhere. But Mr. Janke?
Mr. Chair, give me a moment here, and I'll see if I can find the general fund increase for you. Mr. Chair and members, by doing some very rough math here, it's about a $400,000 net increase in the first year, and it's actually a decrease of approximately $300,000 in the second year. If you're looking at general fund spending, because of the decrease in spending for the decoupling proposal.
Now, does any of this, the utilities increases, does any of it affect the municipal utilities or the co-ops, or is it all about the IOUs? Do you know that right off the top of your head?
Mr. Chair, a number of these assessments go to different groups. Primarily, when you're looking at the decoupling for the energy regulation proposal, that's going to hit the bigger companies. The IOUs and some of the others. When you're looking at the energy planning and systems assessment, the language in that allows that those go out to co-ops and unis and a lot of the smaller companies, as well as the GESP. Those would go out to co-ops and unis as well as some of the bigger companies.
Now, can I assume that'll be passed on to the ratepayers or?
Mr. Chair, the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program one, it does not. It comes out of the energy savings for each of the projects. So, you know, it's considered a funding source, and it's assessed to the cost of that. So whoever is saving the money is the one that's going to be spending the additional fees. The Energy Planning and Systems Extension, again, it's currently in statute. It's being funded right now, and it's assessed, as Mr. Janke had indicated. This one is just scheduled to sunset. What this one funds is the reliability administrator function of the department, meaning we oversee, you know, whether or not the system is reliable, whether or not the you know, the infrastructure's in place, the transmission, and working with MISO and making sure we have appropriate reliable systems. This one is just to continue that in the same way that it has before. With the decoupling, as it is now, it is assessed to the utilities to pay for those staffing. And in essence, ultimately, at the end of the day, it comes wherever those sources of funds from the utilities are. It does come from the base rate, the rate paying. So as to those, you know, and indirect, it would be, yeah.
And is now, are we trying to get back the 21 staff that have been reduced in the somewhere
way.
Along the way? Are we trying to refund them?
Mr. Chair, there currently are 21 staff. These are the staff that review all of the rate cases and the work that's being done by the department right now. The issue is really making sure that when the workload, when utilities file their rate cases with us, it's a tremendous amount of work. So it allows us to add an additional FTE or so as that workload increases, and it goes the other way. When the workload diminishes, this would allow us the flexibility to reduce the assessment in the event that that would happen on the utilities. And it's meant to give us that flexibility. Right now, currently, over the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years or more, the utility rate dockets have expanded. They've been a lot of work because they file the rate cases. So what this would allow us to do is to perform at the rate and pace that the utilities are filing their rate cases with the PUC that the department is working on.
Okay, one of my least favorite ones of all is the it's only 50 cents a car, but it's on our insurance policies, and I always thought it was for educating people on how to not get their cars stolen, and now it's for all kinds of other reasons. What do we really use that money for? Can you kind of tell me what we really use that money for? Because I mean, it's kind of, you know, intuitive that you lock your car when you get out of it, don't leave your keys in the ignition, you know, park under a light at night, you know, that kind of stuff. But you know, it just seems to me that we charge people this, and I'm not sure what we use it for anymore. So, you know, what do we use it for, you know?
Mr. Chair, you're referring to the auto theft prevention.
That would be the one, yep.
Program, which is not part of our change items.
It's, no, I know. I just don't like it.
I know. I'm just trying to make that point.
Okay.
But to answer your question again, I'm happy to brief you on that as well. And we have talked off and on about that. I understand your issue. But in essence, what that program does is it's a grant program. It's a special revenue funds in statute that assesses those policies, and the money is administered by the Department of Commerce staff, in particular through our Commerce Fraud Bureau. And the grants are given to local and county prosecutors. So sheriffs and local police officers, municipal, the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as prosecutors who are working on auto theft initiatives and programs in their own jurisdictions.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on one of the issues that Senator Rood commented on regarding real estate licensing, in particular education. I think, you know, there's a lot of licenses for which the department maintains the rules for continuing education. And I have no problems with continuing education and that type of thing. I want to make that clear. But I do want to comment, holding a couple of those licenses, that I belong to a professional organization that concerns itself with farm management and rural appraisal. For many years, we would have our annual meetings and summer tours, and we would have tours that we would go out. We would look at different types of construction, actually, and we were able to get continuing education. Well, somewhere a few years ago, the department decided, well, we can't have that kind of continuing education. We have to have a very structured item with 15-minute blocks that are all nicely outlined to make sure the instructors are qualified. And yet, what would happen is we would visit with someone who has built a new type of cattle barn, for example, spend an hour and a half, find out why this building was better than the old brand, and maybe there was more functional economic obsolescence under old construction, all those kind of things that, quite frankly, 8 hours of classroom time cannot tell you. And so I just want to maintain today that in the continuing education department, we have indeed a lot more structured items, and everything has got a nice outline somewhere collecting dust in a file. But it's costing us, as those of us that maintain licenses, it's costing us more money, it's requiring more time, and we're getting less bang for our buck. And I know we can't solve that problem at the table here today, but someday if you would like to send someone over to talk to Senator Root and I think we'd be actually very happy to explain the real world to them.
That works. Okay, any further questions? We got outside the Twin Cities for Senator Saxhog's bill, so any other comments or questions from the committee? Okay, Commissioner, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about before we get the session ended up, but thank you very much. I appreciate the presentation, and we'll be back to you, and maybe you should meet with Senator Rudin and Senator Weber, okay?
All right. Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and as to that, we're always happy to work on those issues. So.
Okay.
We'll do that, and thank you for your time today.
And see what would happen if we only had 50 cents a policy for that car thing, okay? Max. Senator Saxhog, Senate File 22. We were wondering what that was up there.
Warmed up.
I think you just turned it off. Oh, not yet. Okay.
We got to get one more chair. No,
asking for disaster.
He's, but if it was really
hot. Good. I like it. I like it.
I out to someone who does that for a living. Yeah. I make sure that all you.
Senator Saxhog, this is one of those bills that's really easy to understand.
This one's easy to understand. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today, get everybody seated here. We're presenting Senate File 22. This bill adds $5 million to the base budget in both fiscal years 16 and 17. It's to explore Minnesota tourism. The 66% increase in the last biennium brought Explore Minnesota Tourism back to the levels of pre-2008. This money allowed them to expand marketing in such places as Canada and Colorado, and it resulted in a substantial return on investment, which these people will discuss with you today. And with me today to give brief presentations are Terry Madsen, co-chair of, there's Terry there, of Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition, president of Visit St. Paul. You may have seen him on Almanac Friday night discussing the ship cruises from New Orleans to St. Paul. Doug Killian's next to me. He's co-chair of Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition and senior director of International Tourism, Mall of America, MOA. And Megan Christensen, Bemidji native, executive director of Visit Grand Rapids, one of the stars of Northern Minnesota Tourism. So I don't know which order they're going to go, but I'm going to turn it over to them.
Okay, just say your name for the record and just who you represent, and then go ahead and give your testimony.
Thank you very much for this opportunity today. My name is Doug Killian. I'm the senior director of international tourism from Mall of America. And Senator, thank you, Senator Saxhog, for your support. We just wanted to very briefly today to just bring your attention the importance of funding Explore Minnesota Tourism. We were very thankful for a increase in the Explore Minnesota Tourism budget 2 years ago, which has allowed us to really increase the economic benefits for the state of Minnesota.
Senator
Saxhog
was instrumental in that, by the way.
Yep, exactly.
Even though I got the award, he was instrumental.
Yep, absolutely. It's tourism. Is a $13 billion industry in Minnesota. It supports 250,000 leisure and hospitality jobs, providing almost $4.5 billion in wages. And so it has an 8-to-1 return on investment. And we are very excited about the increase we got 2 years ago. It's paying big dividends for the whole state, and we want to continue that. And just very quickly, I have had the privilege of serving on the Governor's Tourism Council for about 10 years. And some 5-6 years ago, we continued to see the tourism budget for Explore Minnesota Tourism drop. And we saw, and I think all of us are very aware of the advertising in the Twin Cities, but really all over the Minnesota from our competitors, Wisconsin, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, just inundating us with tourism ads for their states because they know Minnesotans love to travel. And we finally got tired of it on the tourism board. We just said, this has got to stop. The tourism EMT budget dropped from about 25th to about 31st, and it was dropping further still. And we know as Mall of America how much time and effort we put into tourism marketing, as well as St. Paul and Minneapolis and all of our other great partners in the state. So we took it upon ourselves to form the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition, and hired a terrific partner, Sarah, with her firm, Sarah Pisick. And we got this increase 2 years ago, and now it's showing very good returns. But it's just starting. You know, in the tourism markets, the increased budget has allowed us to advertise in some additional markets, and it's allowed us to make a little headway in the international markets. And but if we don't continue that, we're gonna squander those resources, especially in the international market. You've got to be there year after year to develop relationships so they know that you're a long-term player. We do a lot of economic research at Mall of America. Local shoppers are very important to the mall. A U.S. tourist, someone who comes from outside the 150-mile radius of Mall of America, spends 1.5 times more money per visit to the mall. And an international traveler spends
1.5 times what?
1.5 times more money per visit to the mall.
Right.
An international visitor spends
the person
2.5 times.
Within 150?
Yeah, what's up?
Spends 1.5 times more than a person from within 150 miles.
The immediate area, correct. And an international traveler spends on average 2.5 times more money per visit. And also for every...
That would be Chisholm, Mr. Chair.
Right. I'm not on that list. Anyway, go ahead.
And also for every dollar that a tourist spends at Mall of America, he or she spends on average another $3 in the Minnesota economy on lodging, restaurants, professional sports, museums, theaters, camping, going to many other parts of the state. So we're starting to see the return and the growth in our economic benefits that are fueling more jobs for Minnesota, more tax revenue, and it's very exciting. But again, we need to really keep it going. There's also a public-private national tourism agency for the United States called Brand USA. But it's dependent on funding by Explore Minnesota Tourism so that they can make programs affordable for all the tourism entities in the state, including our wonderful outstate partners. And then we're starting to see some real return on that investment, but we've got to continue that. So I just, in short, more than 100 Minnesota tourism organizations are part of the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition. We're getting more support every day. They're energized, they're excited for the benefits that it's bringing to the state, but we need to continue that with increased funding. So thank you.
Senator Osmond, do you want to ask now?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you determine your return on investment that is, because what you're telling us is you're having a return on investment, the dollars we're putting in is getting more impact than in the economy. How do you filter out standard organic activity that takes place within an economy that continues to improve? And yes, the economy continues to grow and it continues to improve. How do you measure your actual success and filter out the organic static numbers that will come in on top
of
it?
Yeah, I know all of our wonderful hotel partners, they measure their tax revenue that is generated by tourist stays, and that's the standard measurement. They see tremendous growth in the last couple of years, and so that's one of the big ones. We see an increase in the number of jobs that are created in the tourism industry, among campgrounds, hotels, restaurants, you name it. So, but the hotel lodging tax is the biggest barometer. And there's a whole industry, the Minnesota Convention of Tourism or Tourism Bureaus is devoted to that and has extensive research, which we'd be glad to provide.
Mr. Chair, but how do you tie it directly to the financial input that you are doing from this program to actually determine the success? Because just saying, well, our tax revenues have increased at the hotel doesn't necessarily say it's coming from your program. It can be just the simple fact that organic increases in the economy itself can lead to that by itself. That's what I'm trying to filter out is how do you filter that out to determine how your success is?
A very good question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is John Edmond. I'm the director of Explorer Minnesota. Maybe I can help you a little bit on your answering your question. We use a company called Longwoods International as well as Oxford Economics to calculate our return on investment. What they do is they take a look at the advertising that we do in the markets that we do it, and then they interview consumers to ask them, would you have taken a trip that you otherwise would not have taken to Minnesota as a result of some touch point with Explore Minnesota Tourism Advertising? And so then they factor in, they calculate what the dollar amount was that we used to advertise, what they got, we figure out what they spent and how much they generated in taxes, and from that then you get the return on investment. And I assume, Mr. Chairman, Senator, that then that factors in the growth of the economy because it does ask them the question, would you have taken a trip you otherwise would not have taken? So then it factors away all those people that have taken trips anyway.
Okay. Thank you. Who wants to go next?
You know, I just wanted to add to that, you know, we have a fantastic international airport, Minneapolis-St. Paul. The industry works very closely with the Delta. Condor Airlines is starting service this summer. Iceland Air flies here. So we have this wonderful service. But sadly, about 90% of the people, the passengers who connect from international to domestic flights or domestic international go on to other destinations. We want more of those people to come to stop in Minnesota on their way to wherever they're going, or on their way back, or just for vacations in Minnesota. So that's another huge opportunity. We have fabulous international service here, but not enough of those passengers get off their planes and spend their money and time here in our great state.
Haven't those snowstorms out east stopped a lot of people here? What the heck? Senator Westrom.
Two airlines you just mentioned, what were their names again?
Well, of course, Delta, our major hub carrier here, has fabulous international service. But then Condor Airlines is
Condor.
Okay. Yeah, a German-based airline. They started service last summer from June through September, nonstop service from between Frankfurt and Minneapolis. And then Iceland Air has been flying here since 1998.
Iceland.
A very good partner.
Iceland. So you said Iceland. Okay.
Yep.
I didn't want to confuse it for something else, so thanks.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, thank you for introducing this bill. Senators, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Terry Mattson. I'm the President and CEO of Visit St. Paul and the River Center. Appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony. One of the great things about Minnesota is we have such diversity in our product. The problem, or the gap, if you will, is still that there isn't a great awareness of this product, and that's why we need your help. I'm very, very lucky to have spent nearly three decades in the same position in Duluth before arriving in the Metro, so I think I can kind of bridge that gap, knowing what life is like in greater Minnesota and also in the Metro. There is a difference, but I can assure you that there is uniformity. There is a real connectivity between this industry. There are no regional divides or battles in terms of everyone's support and enthusiasm for Explore Minnesota. We all benefit from the additional funding. As it was pointed out, the Minnesota Tourism Growth Coalition represents more than 100 entities border to border throughout the state. This is an important industry. It directly raises $840 million in state sales tax revenue. That's about 17% of all of your state sales tax revenues. I want to thank you very much for the increase in the last biennium. It's been very helpful. It was material. We owe it to you to show you some examples of what that work is doing all across Minnesota. I have with me Lisa Huber from Visit St. Paul, who's going to queue up some television spots. This is by no means a comprehensive look at everything we've done at Explore Minnesota Tourism, but it does show you how we represent the Minnesota experience, or telling our story to consumers throughout the country and throughout the world. So could we queue those up, please? The first ones we're looking at are spring and summer commercials, 30-second spots from 2014, then we'll roll into a fall spot, and then also winter 2015 spots. So.
Take a trip. Pass some water. Pass some trees. Wait, don't you dare pass that. I'm on a course. Get out. Look around. No, really, look around. Take hold. Take a breath. Jump. Climb. Seek your fortune. Laugh. Pinch yourself, because this has happened, and it might not ever happen again. Well, not like this.
Who's the music by?
Because this country happens only in Minnesota. Take a trip. Find the trail. Look out. Call some friends. Hello. Come on, bring it in. Look at you. This is going to be good. Look at that. Be your hero. See a bird. Nice leather. Nice wool. How'd they make that? Oh, that's how. Play with the puppets. Conquer your fear. Read to the chickens. Shake, break, laugh, run, jump, smile, look up. Discover a world that's only in Minnesota. Take a trip. Dress up. Go out. Get artsy. Get foodie. Get a royal welcome. Do some more. Sample some wine. Sample some cheese. Ooh, that looks good too. Better sample it. Hey, save some seats. Great seats. Good times. Mmm, good oysters. What's next? How about here? And here. And there. And cheers. Smile. It's modern. It's classic. It's totally you. And it's only in Minnesota. Take a trip. Get the band back together. See moments as possibilities. Take a wrong turn. Hunt. Gather. Sing louder. Eat your face off. Commit. I mean, really commit. And then, let go. This is life. But life is so rarely this. So promise to do it again next year. Only in Minnesota. Take a trip. Find some friends. Find a seat. Find your power animal. Hey, girl. Head back. Get a lift. Take a drop. Wait, is that a... You betcha. This is awesome. So is this, and this, and that, and... Are you kidding me? Nope. Kick off your shoes, or buy some new ones. Have a beer. Catch a show. Start a fight. And make everyone wish they were only in Minnesota. Take a trip. Take a day. Take a week. Take whatever you need. Hit the powder. Hit the pool. Nice. Do this. Do that. Do the other thing. And then, do a recap. Alright, get back out there. Skate the lakes. Warm up. Down a s'more. See that thing. And those guys. And just, wow. Have the winter you've always wanted. Only in Minnesota.
So, regardless of those commercials, I still want to pick up that snake.
Mr. Chairman, we could help with that. We
no,
could,
I don't want your help. Okay. Senator Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sachshaug, and testifier, I'm just curious, is there a tangible study of which states visit our state the most as tours? You know, in like the top five or... And in relation to that, you know, what are the international community, what are the top five international community that visit our state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm confident that detailed market research does exist. Mr. Edmund could help from that, and we're certainly happy to do briefings. I know that our awareness and our visitorship is most likely, those consumers are most likely to come from our neighboring states. That's where the greatest impact is. That's where people know some things, not everything about Minnesota, but we do have some very strong research that points to the fact that once you get away from the neighboring states, the awareness of what Minnesota is all about and the Minnesota experience is certainly not where it could and should be, and that's where the opportunity gap lies. And we could certainly follow up with that hard data with you directly.
I'd just add Killian. To Terry's comment, you know, there are 25 million people who live within a comfortable 8-hour drive of the Minneapolis-St. Paul market and basically Minnesota. That's a huge opportunity for the state
Chicago is a very strong tourist market for the Twin Cities and Minnesota. The fact that we have no sales tax on clothing and shoes is huge. When they do research around the world on why people travel for leisure, shopping is always number one, and clothing is the number one item people want to buy. And we are only one of four states that does not tax clothing or shoes, and that's a tremendous opportunity. And internationally, the top five markets are Canada, no big surprise there, but huge opportunity for us. And then it's Japan, Germany, the Scandinavian countries, and the real opportunity markets are, of course, China, 1.3 billion people. We're making some real strides there. Very complex market, though, and that's why we, again, need resources for that. Brazil and Mexico and France, too, with double daily nonstop flights in the summer from between Paris and Minneapolis.
I have to add one more for you because now this is going back to my former life, but a friend, Canadian friend of mine married an Italian woman, and when he brought her to the Mall of America, she couldn't believe the price of the shoes, so she bought six pairs for each one of her kids and six pairs for herself. So,
I love that woman.
No sales tax.
Ms. Christensen.
I appreciate it.
Are you done, Terry?
Mr. Chairman, if I may add just a couple of additional comments. I apologize for maybe the inability to hear some of the television spots.
We
worked with the technology available. As it was pointed out, we're just back to the funding levels of 2008.
That was really good, too. But, okay. Oh, are you not done, Senator? Do you have one more question?
I'm almost done, but now I kind of lost my focus.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I'd be interested to see some of the data, whether you can quantify the tourists from Canada or from Japan. You know, that will be important for this industry. And I love the video. I have a job as filmmaking, so I love the video. But it's going so fast, and I wonder if you insert the discovery farm or agriculture component to that's one of the key element that can bring tourists. That's my own suggestion.
Thank you, Senator. I think it's important to also recognize that the television spots are just one fraction of the destination marketing efforts put forth by Explore Minnesota Tourism. It's a very complex world, a very competitive world. There's also direct sales opportunities. There's digital efforts with online media, social media, working directly with travel writers and a lot of different ways to get the message out. So we're just maybe unfairly catching the tip of the iceberg here. And we do want to point out, again, that we're just back, even with a generous increase, back to funding levels from 2008. That puts us about mid-pack in terms with the other states. We heard about the big investments coming from some of our neighbors and other places throughout the country. There is that opportunity gap. We're far, far away from saturating these markets with our advertising efforts. There's money on the table. There's an opportunity for the state to generate a lot more revenues. And we document that this is a better way to create jobs at all levels. We also know that we generate for government more tax revenues per dollar spent by consumers than typically the other industries throughout the state. In closing, my message is to assure you that we are documenting in very tangible ways the returns on investment. They're very, very high. It's about $68 in revenues of total traveler spending for every $1 invested by the state. And any good business mind will tell you that this is an investment worth looking at. I'm passionate about this because I live it every day. I've seen the success that we generated in Duluth. I'm seeing that success every day in St. Paul, from leisure travel to meetings and conventions, from snowmobiling to participation in marketing efforts with the Ryder Cup. EMT works for all Minnesota and all Minnesota taxpayers. We're an industry fueled by promotion, and we need this investment to create more awareness of the Minnesota experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I just, Mr. Chair, and I'll just make a comment. I know that you're kind of looking at the broad and where everybody comes from, and Senator Hur, I understand that question, but I also want to just do the little microcosm of what tourism means to our districts in greater Minnesota and how they help our communities bring in events. And I'm going to tag you on this one because I was just at an event, and thank you for the recognition, but that event travels. And in 2016, it'll be in Ogden, Utah. And so the tourism people were in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, all over that event, figuring out how they're going to do it in Ogden. And I think that event should come to Minnesota in 2020 in Cuyuna Range for the fat bike and snowshoe competition. And that's what Explore Minnesota does for us, because we were able to tap into that. And they will be able to help us bring that event to our community. And I will tell you that Little Eau Claire, Wisconsin, had 3 days of hundreds of people from all over the country there. And that will make a difference for those businesses, whether they make it this winter with no snow for snowmobiling or not. And so our communities, our smaller communities, really rely on Explore Minnesota Tourism to help them prosper. And I know Mille Lacs Lake, this committee allowed Mille Lacs Lake some money from the Tourism Council last year, made a tremendous difference in their marketing efforts for the next year and how they're perceived. And so it's not just the broad who we bring from the international market, which is very important, but it's also who we bring to our small communities and how we make them really successful and those businesses be successful too. So you're right, it's multifaceted, and in the short time we've had here to just the tip of the iceberg of how it impacts the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. And as just a final remark, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rood, we know you have difficult decisions. We're actually asking you to increase an expense line item. And other than raising taxes or raising fees, there isn't many ways for government or the state of Minnesota to actually help the bottom line. But we can assure you that we can document this. We know that in some respects, the state of Minnesota is a business like any other business. Our customers don't just waltz through the front door. They need very professional efforts to get the customers here. And in business, you have to spend money to make money. And increasing the expense line item for Explore Minnesota Tourism, I passionately and hopefully convincingly will urge you to take a very strong look at increasing this expense line item so the bottom line can be even more robust into the future.
You need to say invest, not expense. You need to say invest, okay? Ms. Christensen. Megan.
Thank you, Senator.
Say your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Senators. I'm Megan Christensen with Visit Grand Rapids. So I represent Greater Minnesota, and we are very diverse. We represent everything from Thousand Grand Lakes to Prairie Lands and everything in between. Primarily, we're rural, and populations in the hundreds to hundreds of thousands. We market and promote to lure visitors to our specific locations, and our budgets range from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. Explore Minnesota Tourism grants and co-ops allow us to stretch those marketing dollars and to be a part of advertising opportunities that would not be viable without. Grand Rapids area has seen an increase in lodging revenues 11% from 2013 to 2014. Itasca County employs 1,400 in leisure and hospitality industry, and tourism is one of our three major industry sectors in Itasca County: taconite, timber, and tourism. Visit Grand Rapids took part in Explore Minnesota Tourism grants, and this allowed Visit Grand Rapids to start an inbound marketing program with HubSpot, expand our search engine optimization, and conduct expanded pay-per-click advertising. Visit Grand Rapids was able to do more display ads, YouTube pay-per-clicks, and AdWord buys. Visit Grand Rapids took part in Explore Minnesota Tourism co-op marketing. In 2013, we purchased 2 co-ops. In 2014, we purchased 5. And in 2015, we expected to purchase 7. These co-ops have allowed us to promote Grand Rapids in publications that would not be possible otherwise. I'm just going to have SaxHug just send these around, because these are some examples of my...
Hey, SaxHug.
Thank you, Senator. So I have... There's some co-op opportunities.
She redeemed herself. She redeemed herself.
Sorry, sorry.
He's been called
when
worse.
When I first came to Grand Rapids, I worked for his wife. So we go back a long ways.
He's really popular in Grand Rapids.
So the co-op brings down the cost of advertisement and expands content for Minnesota destinations that align with specific niche markets. So as you can see there, there's snowmobiling, motorcycling, family leisure, bass fishing. So those all were something that we took part in, and we had not had the opportunities previous because of the cost of advertising. So some examples that we took part in was Motorcycling, Roadrunner Magazine, and Explore Minnesota Tourism Motorcycle Resource Page, Bass Fishing in the Iowa Sportsman and Explore Minnesota Tourism Resource Page. Family Leisure was TwinCities.com eBlast program. These definitely brought down the cost. So the average cost savings that I calculated for the ones we participated in was 40% cost reductions. These presented greater exposure to our niche audiences like motorcycling and fishermen. In 2014, Visit Grand Rapids has increased in web visits by 26%. This went from 112,000 in 2013 to 141,000 in 2014. Our social media followers increased by 20%, went from 16,000 to 20,000, and that's on 4 social media sites. Increasing the Explore Minnesota Tourism budget will continue to expand marketing co-ops and grant programs that are essential to greater Minnesota destination marketing organizations.
You know, it occurs to me that if you add hockey in there, you'd probably be able to up those numbers by quite a bit.
Hockey saved us this year. Yeah, we were blessed by Mother Nature. And we have ice, but everybody else has ice. So, you know, we really, it helps to have that baseline. At the last hearing, there was someone that talked about the Roseau, destination marketing, and that hockey really helps them stabilize. But we definitely have seen growth patterns in the amount of bass fishermen, motorcyclists, and snowmobiling in the last year segment. So thank you.
Any questions of Ms. Christensen?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any question, but I have a comment. And I really support the increase because I think that Minnesota, we have not explored our tourist opportunity to the fullest extent.
And he didn't mean that as a joke either.
I'm talking from someone with the with layman experience, you know, working man experience, but I have a different view of Minnesota and from outside in, and different view of America from outside in. I'm sure Mr. Chair does have that sense too, being staying in Italy for many years. And if you look at from the outside in, I see that there's still large room that we can generate, our state can generate income through tourism, and just want to make that comment here.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chair, before we get along too far, I would move that we lay this on the table for possible inclusion.
Okay, and so Senate File 22 will be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And are there any final comments from anybody there? Okay, then, committee members, we have to get out of here because there's another committee coming in. So thank you all very much. Very good presentation, good commercials, and meeting adjourned.